Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Creature Feature, production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host of Mini Parasites, Katie Golden. I studied psychology and evolutionary biology, and today on the show, screaming! Animals that scream, animals that sing, animals that scream and sing, from the teeniest, tiniest screams to some of the loudest yowls in the animal kingdom. Discover this and more as we answer the age-old question: how much would you pay for your own personal security system? Would you pay them in blood? Joining me today is friend of the pod, co-host of Jort Center and Lauer After Hours, Will Poole, a.k.a. Christy Yamaguchi-Bane. Welcome!
Thank you for having me again, Katie. I think this is my third time on here. I'm a three-peater. I'm super excited.
That's right. You should be receiving in the mail a fruit basket.
Oh, good. Good. Well, now, what kind of fruit should I expect?
Is
there exciting, like a pineapple? Okay.
All no, right. I just okay. said an apple, a regular apple. It's actually a basket.
Oh, just an apple.
With one apple in it.
Is there an actual basket, or are you just mailing me a single apple with a stamp on it?
It's an apple wrapped in a napkin.
Okay.
Once you get to five episodes, it'll be an apple tied to a banana.
Okay, tied to a banana.
Well, with like rubber
I don't even
band.
Know how. Okay, all right. I was curious how you were going to fasten it. That seems difficult, and I don't think that's going to survive the postage. But I appreciate your effort. And
10 episodes in, I'll throw in a handful of grapes. So get excited!
I cannot wait for the rotten fruit to show up in my mailbox. So excited for this.
So, did you know that animals scream sometimes?
So when I think of animals screaming, we used to have a pet potbelly pig.
Aww,
and
adorable.
When I would try to get, his name was Spud.
Aww.
And whenever I would try to get Spud to cooperate with me, whenever I'd have to pick him up, that little dude, it's the wildest, most blood-curdling scream you have ever heard. I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the sound like a pig makes or just how loud they can get, but it's incredible. And the first time it happened, it startled me so much. Like it completely catches you off guard.
I feel like pig screams too are uncannily humanoid in a way that's you can distinguish it from a human scream, but it there's a definitely a humanoid aspect to it that's very unsettling.
I agree. Similar to those goats, the compilations
of
the goats that scream. Some of my favorite videos are when people take like metal songs or heavy music, and then they put the goat screams as the tracks to it. It's so good.
There's
so
one good. Let the bodies hit the floor, let the bodies hit the floor with animals sounds. And they've got like a screaming cockatoo, a goat in there. Kookaburra. It's really good. I love it. It's one of my favorite videos.
Fantastic. I've heard, the one that comes to mind is there's a System of a Down mashup with like the song Chop Suey and the Screaming Goats. That's really good.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. I love that. there are a lot of animals we know that they can make loud sounds. Sometimes they can scream. But I think something that is potentially surprising to people is that insects can also scream. In fact, bees can scream for help, which is cute and terrifying.
It is. And I imagine these screams are inaudible to the human ear.
That's not necessarily true. So remember the Asian murder hornets that we were freaking out about? I think kind of near the beginning of the pandemic. So we got a little bit sidetracked there.
But, absolutely. Oh, man, what a pleasant thought. Like that the murder hornets were back before the world completely had gone. That's almost like a nice thing to reminisce on now.
Yeah, we were murder like, hornets. Oh, we got to worry about these giant bees. And then, oops, no, that wasn't it.
Not what we were. Yep.
So there was some worry and still some worry about them because they were found in North America. And our North American bees are woefully unprepared for the presence of these giant hornets because they are very adept at murdering and ripping a bee colony to shreds, to literal shreds. They dismember the bodies of these poor little honeybees. But of course, these are invasive species. And when you go to their native territory in Asian countries, Asian honeybees have actually evolved a number of coping strategies for dealing with these giant murder hornets. So one of these strategies is a honey-curdling scream. So obviously, you may have an image of like B-movie Jerry Seinfeld screaming into the camera with his weird little CGI bee teeth, which I hate so much.
What's with all these murder hornets?
You murdered my whole family. What's the deal with that? You're digesting my body parts.
Okay, you do a much better Jerry Seinfeld impression than I do. And by better, I mean it's terrible.
Yeah, but no, it's bad. So good. It's bad. Don't worry. It's going to be bad,
guys. That's what makes it good.
So don't worry, though. Bees do not scream with their mouths. They actually scream with their butts.
What? Somehow I knew it was going to be the butt, and it still surprised me when you said
it. Yeah, it's always the butt, isn't it?
It is. With insects, yes. Everything happens with the butt.
Everything. Everything all the time. You know that sign in that Japanese amusement park that went viral like a couple years ago where it was like, please scream inside your heart? Because it was at the beginning of the pandemic. And it was like they didn't want people to scream and release a bunch of saliva everywhere. So it was, please scream inside of your heart to ride while riding this roller coaster.
I missed that somehow, but that's such a beautiful and poetic, like, I feel like a lot of people are screaming inside of their heart at all times these days.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's great. Evergreen sign.
Yes. For the bees, it's actually, please scream with your butt. So they point their posteriors in the air and beat their wings against their abdomen while running. So it's like, if you were terrified, you like pointed your butt in the air and started slapping your thighs and then screaming as you ran.
Damn. Okay. So I was picturing an Ace Ventura moment where the bee is bent over, like spreading the butt and talking out of its butt. So not an Ace Ventura movie.
No.
Right?
No, more like you're running with your butt in the air while you're slapping it. And your slaps are so loud, they sound like a scream. So,
cool.
Yeah. So this causes a high-pitched shrieking sound. You know, it's similar to how stridulation in other insects, like crickets will stridulate by rubbing things against their abdomen. For the bees, it's the beating of the wings against their abdomen that creates this percussive sound that is at such a high frequency, it sounds like a scream. And it alerts other Asian honeybees to the presence of a giant hornet. It's also used to warn its comrades of other types of hornets, like the Vespa soror hornet, which is another large hornet who is very similar to the giant hornet, also hunts in packs and attacks beehives. So they've got a few hornet species to worry about, these poor honeybees. But the most unsettling thing about this scream is how eerily human-like it sounds. So researcher Dr. Heather Medilla said to the New York Times, quote, "I would get chills and start to worry about them. Even though the recordings are from years ago and the bees are long dead, there's something very human and recognizable in the sounds." So,
wow, that's spooky.
Yeah, unfortunately, I tried to find audio of the bee screams. I couldn't find it. I'll keep looking, and if I find it, I will definitely share with you guys. But
I will
it is,
too.
Yeah.
I wonder if did you happen to learn whether the screams were distinct depending on the type of hornet attacking the colony?
That's a really good question. I don't know if there are individual screams for the species of hornet, but there's definitely an alarm call. I think that means hornet intruder. But that's a really good question. I wouldn't be too shocked if they had different kinds of sounds for different types of threats. But as far as I know, there's sort of one general, hey, there's a hornet, it's going to decapitate us, this is bad, sort of
right.
butt drumming sound.
And do these honeybees, I've seen video before where bees will swarm a hornet.
Yes.
And overheat the hornet, basically like using their wings to increase their body temperature to the point where it can't survive.
That is absolutely correct. This is the other tactic that these Asian honeybees will use. It's a remarkable behavior because they will cover the hornet, and just like you said, they will actually boil it alive, and they do that by vibrating their abdomens, which generates this friction and a high enough temperature to cook the hornet in the middle of their tactical mosh pit. And they also, by forming that ball, I think they increase CO2 levels, which also basically, if the boiling doesn't kill them, they suffocate it. And it is incredible. They actually have one more fun anti-hornet tactic, and that is collecting animal dung and spreading it onto the entrance of their hive to ward off hornets. And
what?
It's kind of gross, but it's remarkable because bees are very fastidious. They're very clean. They even poop right outside of their own hives because they want to keep things as clean and tidy as possible. They want to protect their delicate larvae from pathogens. So the fact that they were bringing poop to their hive was really confusing to researchers. It seemed very counterintuitive. But
sure,
by placing the animal dung at the entrance, it actually wards off these hornets with a foul smell, and it's called fecal spotting, and they'll just take basically little bits of dung from all sorts of different animals and like put it sort of like a just kind of like paint with it very artistically, like Bob Ross, like, now we want to put the want to put the bear diarrhea right here, that's some nice bear diarrhea, that'll really ward off those wasps. And oh, and here's some bobcat dung. We're going to put the bobcat dung, and it's going to make this really nice kind of fresco.
Happy little logs. Happy little turds. Okay, so I'm just saying, I've never thought about this as like a security tactic.
Yeah.
But if I went and collected the dog poop in my backyard and smeared it all over the front door of my house, I would not have to worry about anybody showing up on my front porch.
That'd
that
do
would
it.
Absolutely that would
no
that would ward
you.
I mean Not no one's visiting me. I'm not getting any packages also. No. So that would, you know, that'd be unfortunate. But also home intruders. Nobody is going to break into my house if they start to come in or try to pry in the front door. You don't need security systems. You don't need these Ring doorbells or you know, weapons for to protect your home. Just smear poop all over your front door and the entranceway.
By the way,
that's brilliant.
This podcast is sponsored by PooSafe, a cheap alternative and eco-friendly solution to protecting your home.
It's absolutely recycle that poop. Get out there, go, you know, collect it from your neighbors. Will love you if you're collecting their dog poop for your home protection. It's a win for everybody.
Will they? I sure love my neighbor who smears my dog's poop on their door.
I mean, if you know what, like once it leaves my yard, I don't care what happens to it necessarily. And also I don't have to visit them,
right.
You know, I don't have to, you know, be neighborly or anything. I think it's a net positive or a net positive, overall, should I say?
Yes. A good way to clear out guests too. Just start like, you know, laying down poop on the floor. And it's like, oh, this is what I do at midnight, so you might want to mosey on. This may seem drastic, right, for the bees to smear poop all over their beautiful hive entrance, but if you had to face these hornets down, these hornets that are more than three times your size, you would probably scream with your butt and smear animal dung around too. So just a quick overview of these hornets. The giant hornets, or otherwise known as the Asian murder hornets, as well as the Vesper soror hornets, are very formidable foes, and they can decimate a honeybee colony, just decapitate a bunch of bees in, you know, they're rapid berserkers of bees. They will often attack in packs and chop up their victims into bite-sized pieces that they carry back to their hornet hive, where they feed the body parts to their larva like they're feeding it into a wood chipper.
Oh my God.
So the adults.
Such a brutal description. God, this is horrifying. I feel like that scientist said she feels horrible. She like can feel the connection listening to those recordings. I'm empathizing with these bees right now.
Yeah, just based on the horror that they go through.
Yeah, seriously.
The reason they have this, like using the baby as the wood chipper technique, is that adult hornets cannot eat solid food. You know, those hourglass figures that they have to keep with that very thin waist. Food cannot pass through that. That is any thicker than a liquid. So the adults chew up the body parts and then spit this paste into the larva's mouths. And then the larva digest it and create this kind of like protein syrup, a protein shake. And then regurgitate that for the adults to eat. So, you know, what a cute family.
Yeah, seriously. I want a sequel to Bee Movie.
Yeah.
But I want it done like a drama.
Yeah.
Just like a horror, like drama style, completely serious, where we actually get to see the horrors of what it's like to be a bee. And fend your family off from these wasps.
I want a remake of Game of Thrones, but it's bees. And yes, if you've listened to this podcast before, you know that bees and wasps really do lend themselves to Game of Thrones style dramatization. I mean, these hornets not only attack honeybees, but they even attack other hornet species. They even attack their own species. Like if there's another hive of their own species, sometimes they'll go in and do Red Wedding style, kill everyone, but then also eat them. Oh, so, no. Yeah.
Okay, so they're hunting for their dinner, I guess.
Yeah.
You could say.
Hey, you know, sustainable.
Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we did just talk about bees screaming with their butts in horror before getting murdered in terrible fashion. So I thought I'd lighten the mood with some singing lemurs.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Singing lemur? Like, okay, so we're talking like Madagascar style?
Yeah, exactly. Prince Julian, okay. Is that the character when he, you know,
I think so, yeah.
I like to so. Move it, that whole thing. Yeah.
Yes.
The
yes.
early 2000s called, they want their sort of dated CGI movie back.
timely reference on our part.
I love it, though, because you're absolutely right that lemurs are from Madagascar. So that movie where you see, all, you know, you have these mini species of lemurs all together, they may not do a whole dance number and singing number together, but indeed Madagascar is where you will find all of the world species of lemurs. And there are many cool, awesome species of lemur. And one of them, possibly one of the lesser known ones, but a incredible species that should be more famous is the Indri or Babakodo. So the Indri is one of the largest lemurs in the world. Like all lemurs, lives exclusively in Madagascar. And they are critically endangered, which is a shame because they are absolutely amazing. So these Indri weigh up to about 20 pounds or 9.5 kilograms and grow up to about 28 inches or 72 centimeters long. So, you know, bigger than a cat, maybe a medium-sized dog. They are adorable. They look like teddy bears. They have black and white fur and yellow eyes. Their faces have this black fluffy fur with these tufted black ears that look like an extra fluffy teddy bear. And they have these short stubby tails, which is very rare. In fact, they're the only lemurs that have lost their tails to this extent. So they look...
Oh, that's unfortunate.
But it's cute.
What a bum. Yeah, I guess so. But if I'm a lemur, I want a tail to swing from. Like, that's one of the coolest things about, you know, living in a tree for the
most part. As I'll discuss later, they don't really need it. They do live in trees, but they don't need their tail. And there's an interesting explanation for that. Actually, they are so big that one of the main purposes of these tails for lemurs actually isn't to hang from trees. It is for stabilization. And this is true of a lot of primate species. It helps them stabilize. It's true they can, primates that have prehensile tails can wrap them around branches to hold on to things or even use them to like grip things like leaves. They typically use it to balance their leaps and their jumps and movement. And that's the same thing for lemurs. So lemurs like to leap from branch to branch, and they will use these tails as sort of almost like mid-air rudders to help balance them as they glide. But the thing is, the bigger you get, the less a tail is going to do actually in terms of balance. And because the Indri is so big, the one of the biggest lemurs, it is these tails sort of become less useful. And there was some research done looking at how like tail mass basically no longer, if they had a tail, it just wouldn't really help them stabilize their leaping. So
that makes sense.
Instead, they have this cute little stubby tail that I think.
What? How do you spell that again? Indri?
Indri. I-N-D-R-I or Babakoto.
There we go. Okay. Oh my God. He is so cute. Okay. I was looking at the wrong kind. Wow. You were not kidding about the teddy bear thing. Like the big. He's almost got like a Mickey Mouse shaped outline of a face and ears. That's absurd. God, lemurs are so
absolutely adorable.
Cool looking.
Like a cartoon teddy bear. Extra fluffy cartoon teddy bear.
Absolutely. Do these things blink? It doesn't look like they can blink.
They blink. They do.
I'm sure they can, but like it's the most high on methamphetamines looking animal in the animal kingdom.
It does it's look like looking. They would win a staring contest with you easily.
Yes,
or like you would get one of these as a teddy bear and you'd sit it at the foot of your bed and wake up in the middle of the night and it'd be staring at you.
It looks like an animatronic. Like that's, you know, the unblinking eyes of like a Showbiz Pizza or a Chuck E. Cheese or something. It gives off that vibe when I look at one.
Yeah, I see that. I think it's a creepy cute thing, though. It's like
it's those Uncanny Valley type.
I think
thing.
It's because of the yellow eyes and little pupils. They look very alert. So despite maybe looking like a creepy animatronic sometimes or a cute animatronic, whatever your opinion, their behavior is very cute. So they have little family units. They are monogamous and they stay in family groups. And they are very playful and like to wrestle for fun, especially females. Another win for feminism. So they are extremely difficult to keep in captivity. They actually typically only last like a year in captivity, despite the fact that they can live up to 18 years in the wild. And this is likely due to their extremely specialized diet that is very difficult to replicate. So they only seem to eat certain foods at certain times of days, and it's a variety of foods. So leaves, seeds, flowers, fruit, and bark, but they have this specialized diet where they eat a certain thing at a certain time of day, and it helps them digest it better, which you just cannot replicate in captivity.
Sure, yeah. Too stressed out to follow their regimen, probably.
Yeah.
Not, you know, being handled by people or being in an enclosed environment.
Yeah.
Man, I'm glad that they have realized that. Are these, so these aren't really kept. You can't see these anywhere but in the wild, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. And they are actually the only lemur that communicates through singing, and they are very musically talented. So their calls sort of sound like air horn blasts. Not only are these calls loud, but they also follow musical patterns. So
that's cool.
There was a study done at the University of Turin, Italy, that found that their calls were used for a number of types of communication, to locate family, to establish territory, and to do sing-offs with neighbors. And it can be either to establish a connection between neighbors, to communicate about mating or environmental conditions, territory boundaries, or warnings of predators. And it is actually interesting in that they seem to follow a musical pattern. So I'm going to have you listen to a sample of some of these injuries singing. So this is actually a female singing with her mate and her son. So a little family, the Von Trapp family singing group.
So was that one like continuous song there or samples from many?
Yeah, that's one continuous song.
Oh, cool. Okay. You were not kidding about the air horn. Holy cow. Yeah, it sounds like Jamaican air horns, like you would hear it, like, yeah, some reggaeton or something.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And it also has, like, kind of a humpback whale quality to some of them.
Yeah, too. I can hear that. Yeah, and so, yeah, I mean, it's adorable because it's a family singing together, mother, father, and son. And they often sing in duets, and I don't know if you noticed, but they were harmonizing there. They would have one singing one tone, the other in a slightly different tone, and singing together in these duets. And they have very flexible mouths and lips that can change the tone of these notes. So they, you know, do this like little whoop, and so they can angle the tone. I'm not a musician, so I can't.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Doppler effect, like you can stretch and contract the size of the wave, the vibration coming out of your mouth.
Right, exactly.
That's so cool.
And so researchers have studied these calls and found that they like to do them in a specific rhythm, a 1-to-2 ratio of beat patterns, which is actually the same type of beat pattern as found in Queen's We Will Rock You. So the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interestingly musical. They also drag out the final notes of their calls, which is similar to in music when you have the ritardando at the very end where you kind of like slow down a piece of music dramatically. It seems like they do that and have this kind of flourish at the end, which is unusual for animals who use song to communicate. Typically, an animal either sticks to a pattern or they don't. They don't often like add little flourishes at the end of their song, which is very interesting, especially because,
I was just going to say, have they decoded why they do that?
I don't think so. No, it's not necessarily known why they have that slowdown at the end of songs. They know that they use these songs for a variety of communication, from anywhere to saying like, hey, I'm an available mate, to hey, this is our territory, or even like, you know, communication like I'm over here. So there could be a purpose to that. I'm not sure that it's known yet.
I'm just going to pretend that it's just the artist choice. Mm-hmm. Like they're making a decision there, and that's their signature style, you know, the way I write a song and I have a certain style to it. That's just their artistic interpretation, their expression coming out.
I mean, we got our appreciation from music from somewhere in our evolutionary history. Now, while we did not evolve from lemurs, they are a primate. They are a cousin of ours, a distant cousin, a very distant one. But at some point, you know, primates had an appreciation for, you know, rhythm and sound that became our human appreciation for music. So I do find that really interesting that we see another primate species, no matter how distantly related they are from us. They did branch off at a very early point in our evolution, but they have this appreciation for some kind of, I mean, to me, it is at the very least a predecessor to music, if you couldn't 100%. Classify it as music.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a big fan of just musical air horn blasts. It's very festive. I kind of imagine them watching some European football together.
Oh man. Yeah, just breaking that out. Like I imagine they make that sound like they've eaten some fermented leaves or something. they've gotten a little tipsy around the holiday party, and then the air horns start going off.
Yeah. No, I love it. Yeah, but like I mentioned earlier, they are critically endangered, and conservation of the species is really, really important. They can't be kept in captivity, so if their natural habitat goes, there is no way of preserving them or bringing their population back. And their habitat is threatened by deforestation and illegal mining of sapphires, which is a big problem in Madagascar. But before you get like mad at like these individual miners or something, the humans in Madagascar are suffering as well. They're being exploited. So these miners are often driven to do these extremely low-paying, high-intensity labor mining because, you know, they're not getting enough food, they're not getting enough money, they can't feed their families. And even the local mine bosses aren't really paid that much compared to the money being made off of this illegal sapphire mining. Most of the money goes to the gem dealers and the retailers. So I think I'm bringing this up because I think it's often important to point out how exploitation of animals often goes hand in hand with exploitation of humans. So, you know, you see that this beautiful species is being threatened by something like illegal mining. And I think sometimes people may react in this way of like, oh, you know, being angry at these miners, like, don't they understand? Sure, they're ignorant. Sure. And it's like, well, no, they're also being exploited by this system. So it's really a systemic problem. It's not these poor people in Madagascar just trying to make a living who are the problem. It's this system that is causing this problem. So, you know, it's important to have as much, if not more, compassion for people as it is for when we're upset about an animal being threatened.
Yeah, direct the anger towards the people that are causing the most of it. It's like, I recycle, I try not to use one-use plastics and stuff, but then, you know, it's the thing you see all the time. Like, look at the top 100 most polluting corporations in the world, and it's like, There's no amount of getting on the same page as a human population that can prevent the amount of CO2 release as these corporations do.
Exactly.
So direct your ire at the appropriate people responsible.
Exactly. Follow the money. Follow it.
Yes. Always follow the money.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
So we talked about Poo Safe earlier, right? The very environmentally friendly, personal sort of home security system that rivals these other silly home security systems. Poo Safe protects your home 24/7 with the presence of foul-smelling dung that you spread on your door. But I actually do have another home security system called Oxpecker Alert. It is an incredible technology of the red-billed oxpeckers who can alert you to the presence of poachers many, many meters away.
Oxpecker is a very misleading name or something. I will say that much. I was not sure if this was going to be a bird or I did not know.
Anyways.
What kind of okay, all right, moving
all
along.
All right. Well, it is a bird. Before you finish that thought, the red-billed oxpecker is a bird. It's actually quite a pretty bird.
Excellent.
How would you describe this bird?
Oh, yeah, that's a gorgeous bird.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like a small tan and black bird with a yellow and red bill and these red eyes. Quite
eyes
beautiful.
Are beautiful.
Yeah, beautiful. And they like to hang out with some big friends: zebras, hippos, giraffes, cattle, and other large mammals of the savanna in Africa. So they even sit atop the fearsome rhino and nibble at ticks, botfly larvae, and other pests.
Love a good relationship there.
Yeah, and it's a complicated relationship. It's really interesting because they do help their large companions by eating parasites, but they do occasionally peck little wounds into their host's skin and sip on their host's blood, which actually would make the birds themselves parasites. But there's kind of a debate, right? Like, because, you know, even though that itself is parasitic, they are also helping their hosts by getting rid of parasites. So it's like, well, do they do more harm than good, or do they help more? And some of the a point in favor of the oxpecker not being a parasite but being in a mutualistic symbiotic relationship is the fact that they seem to protect black rhinos from poachers.
Wow.
So black rhinos are big, tough, endangered animals with great smell and hearing, but very bad eyesight. And they are unfortunately often the victims of human poaching, and they are critically endangered. So rhino researcher Dr. Rowan Plotz noticed that rhinos that were close enough for them to observe had no oxpeckers on their backs. They always seemed to not have their little bird friends. And that made him wonder, that's an interesting coincidence. Maybe it's not a coincidence. So they did some observational studies that found that the oxpeckers helped alert the rhinos of a human's presence. So when the oxpeckers spot a human, they issue an alarm call, which is a hissing shriek, and the rhinos listen to this alarm call and will move away from the area. So these studies found that rhinos with oxpeckers are better at moving away from humans than rhinos without oxpeckers. And what's really interesting is the more oxpeckers they have, the better they are at being alerted. So one oxpecker is okay, but you got a whole group of five oxpeckers all shrieking at you. You're like, ah, geez, what's going on?
Yeah, like one alarm on your front door is nice, but if you have all the windows hooked up and your back door hooked up too, you're gonna be even more safe.
Exactly. No, I mean the more alarms, the better. Car alarms, air horns, everything, bells.
Yeah, seriously.
It's the home alone version of home security.
Yeah, seriously. I love examples of species talking to each other. I absolutely loved, I heard a story a long time ago. I think it was on like an episode of Radiolab or something, where this researcher tells a story of basically learning the distinct calls of monkeys and like eagles in, I believe, like South America, where they made distinct calls whenever a leopard was spotted. And he is walking through the jungle and it's starting to get, you know, dusk out. And suddenly overhead, he hears the distinct call. And as he's walking through the jungle, he, you know, from area to area, they're making the call. He was basically being stalked by a leopard through this jungle.
Oh, yeah.
He only knew about it because these other animals were making their call specific to the leopard. They made a specific call just for the leopard when there was, when the monkeys were threatened by birds of prey, like an eagle or something, then they would make a different call.
It's a different
for that
call,
so
yeah.
Exactly. So that's how he knew that there was a leopard following him.
Right. Because it matters where the threat is coming from. If it's a bird of prey, it's coming from the sky. If it's a leopard, it's coming from the ground. And knowing where and the nature of that threat is very important, both for animals and human eavesdroppers. That's an incredible story. I love
that. Isn't that cool?
I mean, what's so interesting about that story is the way that human used those other animal alarm calls is exactly the way the rhino is using the bird's alarm call, because there's no evidence that the birds are intentionally warning the rhino of this threat. It's not like the birds are like, hey, rhino, get out of the way. They're warning each other.
Yeah.
This is what they've evolved to have, this alert system with each other to warn themselves of a threat. But the rhino has learned that this call means humans and will use that knowledge to move away. So exactly in the same way that human researcher is like, I've learned this call means a leopard. I'm in danger. And so it's the same thing with the rhino, but even more terrifying than a leopard, the human.
And also, like, there's a bit of self-preservation there, I imagine, from the bird, in that if my little floating raft of food, my buffet, my tank of a buffet on the savannah gets killed by these poachers, then I'm out of a food source.
It
so
can't hurt. Yeah, it couldn't hurt for them to warn the rhino. It's, again, it's hard to know whether that's just a happy coincidence or if there's any any sort of intention. I mean, I think it's safe to say there's probably not much of an intention for the bird to warn the rhino. I don't know if they could logic that out, but I mean, maybe a smarter bird. There are some birds that I would not necessarily be surprised that they may sometimes use alarm calls. There are actually birds that use alarm calls to scare other animals away from some kind of food source so that they can get to it. So they can.
Oh, wow.
There are definitely bird species. I take it back. There are bird species that know what they're doing and they can use their alarm calls to manipulate others. So it's possible that these birds are somehow, they do know that if they alert that the rhino will move away, which is much better for them than having to, like, you know, fly away and find another rhino to sit on. But there's no evidence of that yet. So Either way, this is a lovely little system. The rhino gets warned. The oxpecker gets to keep its perch. And humans get to be thwarted by a dynamic duo.
Beautiful. I love it.
So Will, a.k.a. Christy Yamaguchi Ming, thank you so much for joining me. Tell the people where they can find you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me again. It was a delight as usual. You can find me on Twitter at Wapplehouse, WAPPLEHOUSE. And that's pretty much where I live most of the time, not in real life. You can find me on there. I don't even know what my Instagram handle is, to be honest with you. It's long. There's underscores involved. So whenever I stupidly make a handle with underscores, I always forget where they're at. So, yeah, just find me on there. You can listen to Jort Center Pod, or Jort Center, but at Jort Center Pod on Twitter. And Lauer After Hours if you're a fan of the Dan Le Batard Show. Enough of a fan that you would make a podcast about being a fan of the Dan Le Batard Show. You can find me there.
And thank you so much for listening. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review. I read all the reviews. I love them so much. I really appreciate them all. Cherish them, print them out, put them underneath my pillow, and kiss them before I go to bed at night. And thank you so much to the Space Cossacks for their super awesome song, Exolumina. Creature Feature is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts like the one you just heard, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or hey, guess what? Wherever you listen.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi. I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.